Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio. Hello everyone, welcome to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We are live from the Line Hotel. I am your host, Violeta Edelman, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime,
Rob Duncan, Dolcezza Gelato.
We are gelato makers in Washington, D.C., and we are very excited because today we have two of our personal heroes, our midwives, Mary Brynn Rothman and Erin Fulham. Mary and Erin founded Mamas, a midwifery practice, in 2007, and they both have over 20 years of midwifery experience. We met them back in 2009 when I was pregnant with my first daughter, Pema, and after 5 months of going to an OBGYN at a very busy downtown practice in Washington, D.C., we decided that we wanted to have a home birth. So I went and Googled home birth Washington, D.C., and I found the Mamas practice. I called them, they took me in, and 9 years later and three home births later, here we are today talking to them. So welcome, Mary and Erin, to the show.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here. And just, I'm remembering first meeting you, Violeta, with your wonderful purple sofa and the Volkswagen bug. It was so fun to remember those things.
Hippies in heart.
Hippies in forever. Heart. Yeah. So I want to start by asking you a very basic question and a huge question as well, which is, why home birth?
You mean, why are we interested in providing it, or why would somebody want to have one?
Both. Whatever you want to answer.
Well, I guess my answer is because home is the place that we all started having babies, and I think somehow we think of home birth as alternative, like home birth is an intervention that we do instead of our usual normal thing of going to the hospital, but actually home birth is the normal. And changing the venue to the hospital is an intervention. So you have to have a reason to leave, not a reason to stay.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, it's always been about what is health, right? And so health is it is what you have as opposed to being sick. And it always seemed to me when I was having babies that people were being treated as if they were sick. And I knew I wasn't sick. And so I chose a home birth before I chose to become a midwife because it seemed like I didn't need all those interventions that I heard about and my friends were experiencing. And also, I guess I am a little bit of a homebody. I have my nest. I like to be there. And so that's it. When it worked for me, I wanted to share that experience with other women. And so that's sort of what drew me to midwifery, and always with the intention of offering that kind of care and support and relationship with other women.
When you two had your own births and home births, was it like it is today, where it was so odd or rare, or was it more common back then than it is today?
It was more rare then. In the time since you had your first baby till now, the rate of home births has doubled. Wow. And in Maryland, for instance, it's increased by 60%.
What is it nationally? Is it around 1.5% of women that have home births?
About 1.3, I think.
And is it true what, like in the 1950s, was it like 90% of births were home, or that's not, or
it around the turn of the last century, almost everybody was born at home.
So the 1900s.
But by the 1950s, it was
the opposite.
Like less than 1%.
Okay, so it was from 1900 to 1950 that it kind of went
right. And there was actually a thing called the Campaign to Eliminate the Midwife, and there were all kinds of advertisements in the New York Times and brochures and tracts that were handed out on the street with pictures of straggly-looking, dirty women.
Well, do you know if that was like kind of funded by pharmaceuticals or insurance or AMA or any of that? Kind of the three.
I think that the people that worked in hospitals really wanted birth to move into the hospital because it was easier to train doctors if all the women would come to one place.
Right.
I can only speak from my own experience, but I can say that for me, being in control of my body and having been an active participant through my labor and having minimal interventions during the delivery of my kids created the most powerful experience I've ever had in my life. There is nothing that gets closer to me as having the home births of my kids. I mean, it's the highest of the highest. And I also see it as a little bit of a feminist issue, right? And you were touching upon that, you know. I see how we have a prevailing birth culture that tries to manage and control, you know, women and the process of birth. And women end up, you know, in an unfamiliar setting, laying down in the hands of a male, completely numb from the waist down. So
drugged.
Yes. So you guys are pioneers in this, you know, community setup and this support system that you created in the area. So tell me, what's the importance of, you know, creating support for women and how, like, I think the research shows that women, when they have support, they have less interventions during childbirth. So can you elaborate on this?
Well, to me, it is really a spiritual thing and a political thing. But underneath all of that, or around all of that, I am a science hound at heart, and I'm interested in the data. Like, what is the places safe to have your baby? And if you really look at all the data, if you're looking at low-risk women, they have as good or better outcomes at home with much less intervention and less morbidity associated with that intervention. So I think it's all of those things, scientific, spiritual, political, definitely a feminist issue.
So I guess for me, I think that it's also about transformation, that this is probably one of the moments in your life which is really requires you to go into yourself and find out what you can do. And it's amazing. And for women who are really supported in that and feel like they did do it, not that their doctor delivered the baby, but that they actually did bring this baby into the world, I think it gives them confidence to do all the other things that you have to do as a parent and a human being in this world. And I guess the other thing I wanted to add about this, about the science, is, Violetta, you talked about us creating community. Our practice was based on the idea that we would have a very small number of women each month that we built a relationship with. And so it meant that we could really get to know the families and listen to the women in a way that I think really makes it so much safer. There's been a lot of publicity lately about how very high the death rate for women of color and for their babies. And I think when you read these stories about what happened with these women, they weren't listened to. And that's because their providers didn't really know them, right?
Serena Williams has a very interesting story on that topic. And it's exactly what you said.
Right. So
I was begging for help, and nobody was listening to my needs.
Well, she even knew
what she needed and told them. And they didn't listen.
I'll never forget the when we were one of the first, or the first appointment with the OBGYN. Before we had decided.
We weren't listening either.
We were asking.
That's why
so
we went
came
to you.
With a list. Violetta came with a list of questions to ask the OBGYN of for the first birth, there's obviously a lot of questions one has. So we started talking to him and saying, what about this? And he cut us off. He said, no. Don't worry about any of that. Don't worry about the questions. We will do it all for you. You know, that was one of the first things to us that really took us back and said, this is not how we want to do it.
And I think women more and more are deciding that they're not going to be told what to do.
100%.
It's the moment of the woman right now, for sure.
Yeah, we had a client who was, actually a pretty prominent legislative aide, a very high-powered professional woman, who transferred to us because she was at her provider's office and was going to have some blood work. And she said to the tech, can you tell me what these tests are for? And the person said, they patted her on her hand and said, these are just to make sure that your baby's okay. And she said, but what are they for? And the tech person said, well, you want me to explain what each of these tests is for? And she said, yes, that would be great. And she rolled her eyes and went ahead and explained. And that after the blood was drawn, the woman walked out to the front desk and said, can I have a copy of my records, please? Because she just didn't want to be in a place where she was expected to just be ignorant of her own health situation. And I think more and more women are just feeling some outrage about, I'm an intelligent, whole person that wants to be in charge of my own health, and I don't need anybody rolling their eyes at me.
I want to take care of my baby.
It's unbelievable the water that we swim in, and that most people do not push back. And obviously when they do push back, the resistance that they receive, and then if you even critique it or talk about it, most do that, roll their eyes and say, come on, it's okay. It's unbelievable. And especially, I am the male speaking. I should not even really participate in this conversation because this whole birthing...
But you have a male perspective. You're the father. You're the other half.
I know.
I needed you for my birth.
Yeah, of
you
course.
Were my community and my support.
I was saying
network.
That could be funny, right?
Yeah.
But so, but the thing is, it's... The what I saw with Bialetta giving birth at home, it was a true for. I felt I was participating in this rite of passage of humanness. What does it mean to be human? And a humanness goes back right now, according to evolutionary biologists, 200,000 to 300,000 years. Homo sapiens have been on this planet. That's insane to think about. So that means that humans have been birthing at home in caves, in the field, whatever, 300,000 years, 200,000 years, give or take. And it's like, when I saw Bialetta deliver birth our three babies at home, that there's not one thing that a woman can do that is more empowering, touching on what Aaron said, of like, what does it mean to be a woman if you do not... If you have a baby like Bialetta had at home, you have so many more dimensions and who you are and what you can do than if it hadn't happened that way. You're just less empowered of what it means to be a woman. That is just something that blew me away. As far and that, I think, consciously or unconsciously, was taken away from the woman. I mean, I think that, again, consciously or unconsciously, the male-dominated, male-run society, which it has been at least going back 10,000 years ago when we started agriculture and it stopped being a matriarchal society and became a patriarch
and
society.
You know what? It's great to have your baby at home, but what would it be like if the woman who had to have a C-section, what would it be like if they said to her, what can we do to make this a better experience for you? What can we do to make sure that you don't get separated from your baby and that you can be skin to skin right away?
100%.
What can we do to help you get your milk supply going, if your baby ends up in the NICU? It's like a whole orientation that could be carried over into hospital care.
With the purpose of taking care of the woman and the baby, which that is not the case in the business of birthing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I wanted to go back to you. You were talking, you're very data oriented, and I want to tell people what's that data that we have right now. And what we know about home birth is that the risk of having a C-section is 5 to 10%.
And at hospitals, it's around 35%, so that's more than 50% reduction if you have your baby at home. And this is for low-risk women. We are not against hospital. We're not lobbying against hospitals. I mean, that's a great place if you need an intervention. If you don't, then the house is the safest place. And that's very important that we know that. And I think what Rob was saying is that to have a baby at home is to be against the current, right? 80% of women get some sort of intervention at birth. And we usually, when we decide to do this, we don't know anyone who had a home birth. We don't know who to talk to. No one stumbles into home birth, right? You need to be determined. You need to do your research. It's a road that is not trouble a lot. So tell us from your point of view, what are the things that we can consider as women when we choose a birth care provider and a birth setting?
Well, I think part is to really look at what's available to you in your area, because it's very, very different in city to city, from state to state here. So I think the most important thing is to really look at what your options are and decide what's right for you, because I definitely love being a home birth midwife, and I know that there's lots of women who won't choose that. But then what are your other options? I think that looking at providers, you need to have somebody who is willing to have a conversation with you, who is not such a part, you know, for a lot of doctors in our culture, they really don't have much choice. They get, you know, their 5 to 8 minutes to spend with a client, and then they have to move on. So is that the kind of situation that your provider is in? Or is your provider in a situation where they have ability to form relationships and answer, really be available for answering questions? And that could be whether your provider is a midwife, and most nurse midwives actually work in hospitals. So you can have that experience with a midwife or a doctor where they actually only have 5 to 8 minutes to spend with you. So you want to find out what their practice are.
Not 2 hours like you guys. Yeah. And eating gelato in the living room.
Right. Yes.
And also, yeah, if you find a midwife in a hospital practice or even a birth center or a home birth, you want to ask the midwife, what is your relationship with the physicians? Because there are
how much power do you have?
Or how much autonomy in your practice? Right. Because there are some midwifery practices that that are part of an OB practice or have a partnership with an OB practice who are quite independent, and the obstetricians they work with are really respectful of and knowledgeable about what is their scope of practice and when is it appropriate for a physician to step in. And then there are other practices where they view midwives as what they call physician extenders, where they're working for the physician and helping the physician see more people in their practice and do more deliveries, but for a cheaper price. And so those midwives don't necessarily have much control over their practice guidelines, which tell them when they have to hand over someone who's overdue, or how long someone's membranes can be ruptured, or something, how long they can push before they are automatically a C-section. So it's really important when you're searching for a midwife to ask that midwife, what exactly is the nature of your relationship and how much autonomy do you have in your practice?
So I want to remind everyone that we're talking to Mary Brynn Rothman and Erin Fulham. They are the founders of MAMAS, a midwifery practice in Washington, D.C. And I want to ask you guys...
In Maryland.
In Maryland and the suburbs. And yeah, and everywhere around the D.C. area, guys.
DMV.
If you need MAMAS, Google them. They're awesome. So the main fear that I hear when I tell people that I had home births or when I was pregnant and I was sharing that I was going to have a home birth is, what happens if there is an emergency? So tell us what happens if there is an emergency.
Well, first of all, we try really hard to avoid emergencies, and we're pretty good at it, so we don't have very many emergencies. One thing people are often really surprised to hear is that nationally, 96.1% of transfers from home birth to the hospital are not an emergency.
there because women are exhausted?
Yeah, they've just been in labor for a few days, and they're we've tried everything we can to make the baby come out, and then we tried it again, and then they just decide they would like to go and get some technological assistance. So we go and do that. But
can I just say that that's mostly because of the baby's position? It's not because the mother's body doesn't work or the baby's too big. It's just
the baby's too big.
That's such a myth. Yeah, that just doesn't.
What do you mean the baby's too big?
Yeah.
You know what? I can't count the number of women that have had a successful vaginal birth after cesarean with us when the cesarean was done because they were told the baby was too big. And then when they have the VBAC, the baby's bigger than the one they had to have a C-section for because it was too big. But sometimes a pound bigger.
Yeah, yeah. I've had 12-pound babies basically fall out. So it's, and then 6-pound babies that, like, you were there for 3 days while the baby was looking sideways or had its fingers in its mouth or something, you know. It's really about the baby's position. But Mari, I didn't mean to interrupt you about the emergencies.
So people often say, you know, what happens if you need an emergency C-section? And because so many people have quote-unquote emergency C-sections, like 35% of the population, and but needing an emergency C-section is really very, very rare. We watch for indications that the mother has risk factor all the way through their pregnancy, and then once we're at their house during their birth, I think people think that home birth midwives just, you know, come to your house and sprinkle you with herbs and hope for the best. And not that there's anything wrong with herbs, but
there is a certified nurse.
But here, here, herbs.
Well, in our case, we're certified nurse midwives, but there are midwives who are not nurses, and they are also very wonderful. And they're not relying solely on herbs. We are all trained, whether we're CNMs or CPMs or CMs, alphabet soup, we're all trained to monitor the mom and baby for any kind of emergency, or really to monitor them for well-being. And the vast majority of the time, that's fine. The other thing is to understand that people often say, well, what happens if something goes wrong, as if nothing would ever go wrong in the hospital. And a huge number of complications of childbirth come from a cascade of interventions that start with interfering with that process and end with a bad situation because you've interfered. You know that old commercial, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature? It's really true. When you start to mess with it, then you're managing it instead of Mother Nature, and you're assuming that you know better.
We as modern humans, it's hard for us to trust the process that is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard, I guess, because there's now so many forces vying for your attention or your pocketbook. You know, we're back in the past, I guess, that was not the case. And so you just followed the cycles of the season and the process
but
of
again,
life and birth.
But again,
now
we have this orientation that it's the home birth that's the intervention and the hospital that's normal. And I'm actually currently doing research I'm getting a doctorate in midwifery in a new program. And I am doing research looking at each of the medical interventions that are routine now, to see is there scientific evidence that shows that it's actually a benefit to, for instance, separate the mom from the baby? Is there a benefit to roughing up the baby with a blanket after it's born? Is there a benefit to fetal monitoring or epidurals? Is there some proof that those create better outcomes? And so far, I have not found anything.
That's really smart to do it that way, because that's the language of science is what we all listen to. So if you can come into it and somehow be able to boil it down to data and prove it, then people will see that as valid, as opposed to just a crazy hairy idea that you got.
Well, I'll keep you posted. Yeah,
so Mary, you mentioned a couple of times the first hour after birth, and you said, is there evidence to separating the mother from the baby? And is how you know, there is none, and it's actually the opposite. There is evidence that skin to skin contact actually increases the physical, mental, and emotional well-being of the baby. So this is science, guys. Don't let the hospital take your baby away. Mary, talk to me about, Erin as well, the sacred hour after birth. Tell me what this is and why this is such an important moment.
I think that it is just, I think one thing to remember is that when the baby is born, it's a huge change, right? They've been in this nice little cocoon. It's been warm water. They've been floating around in there. They hear their mother's heartbeat. That gives them reassurance that everything is okay. And even at home, if we keep the lights kind of dim and it's quiet, the baby comes out and suddenly their arms and legs are flailing all over the place. They've got to breathe. They've got to regulate their temperature. And even if we think it's really quiet, it is loud to them and bright. So if for the baby to make that transition into, okay, the world is still okay, the best place for them to be is right on their mother's chest, where they can hear that heartbeat again. They can hear their mother's voice. We always encourage moms and partners and others to speak to the baby gently and let them know it's okay to be here. And, of course, the mother is very warm. So now the baby has the temperature control. They hear the mother breathing and they go, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be doing that. And they are just so then ready to kind of settle in and make that transition to breathing and regulating their temperature. And they're right there ready to get into to nursing, into breastfeeding, because they can smell it even. So it's just all the things that should be happening really can happen if the baby is never separated from the mother. The other thing is, if you don't separate the baby and the mother, you don't have to cut the cord, which is something that we started doing in this country, was just the second the baby comes out, snip, snip, and, you know, the baby's...
Go on work, baby.
Right. The baby's cord provides them with fluid volume so that they can keep their circulation going. It keeps them oxygenated. It's still connected to the mother for quite some time. And so if they don't get that breathing thing down right away in the first 15 seconds, they're never deprived of oxygen. It's still coming through their cord if you don't cut it. So in our practice, often we don't cut the cord for 20, 25 minutes, not because the baby needs it, but because it's disruptive. So, and if the baby actually does need it, heaven forbid the baby hasn't figured out the breathing thing, it's instead of sticking tubes in the baby, we keep the baby connected to its own personal living tube that works for them. So
amazing. Guys, I want to remind everyone that you're listening to the Dolcezza Sherber Experience on Full Service Radio, and I think it's a good time now to take a little break, and we'll be back with Mary and Erin from Mamas.
All the music on this program is produced by Flash Frequency, a local producer here in DC. Find his music at flashfrequency.bandcamp.com. We will be right back.
Welcome back to the Dolcezza Sherber Experience on Full Service Radio. We are live from the Line Hotel. We are here talking to Mary Brynn Rothman and Erin Fulham. They are the founders of Mamas, a midwifery practice in Washington, D.C. and the suburbs of Maryland. And I want to tell you guys that to me, the turning point, the eye-opening moment happened after I saw Ricky Lake documentary, The Business of Being Born, I highly recommend to everyone pregnant out there. The documentary came about because Ricky Lake was disappointed with the experience of the birth of her first son at the hospital. And the film basically criticizes the American healthcare system because of the emphasis on medicine and cost interventions, you know, and taking childbirth as a medical emergency rather than a natural occurrence. So how important has this documentary been in your practice? And what's your take on this view that our healthcare system considers birth as a business? I get a big silence here.
Well,
I could rail on that one.
When we first, actually, we started our practice in 2008. And so I think that it was...
Is that the year that the documentary was done? I think so.
It was. It really made a big difference. We had a lot of people come to us because they had seen the documentary. I think not so much now people come.
I think we need another documentary because pop culture needs... Yes.
You know what? There's another one that recently came out that's great called Why Not Home?
Okay.
And it's a documentary about healthcare providers who work in the hospital who choose to have their own babies at home.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I think that, I think also one thing that has changed is when I first started following the path into midwifery, people didn't know what a midwife was. They said, is that legal? And, you know, in the, that's like been in 30 years. In 30 years, many people have seen Call the Midwife, and they, you know, they're
which is a wonderful series on PBS, if you haven't seen it. And we'll talk more about that, because how different is England's healthcare system?
Mamas has been a sponsor of that show for the last 5 years.
Wonderful.
So I think that people are more informed about midwives, and so I think the idea is growing. I think your question about whether birth is a business is, we just have to look at what percentage of hospital profits comes from the maternity unit. It's incredible. I think that when some hospitals are charging just for the room, you know, just the cost of the room is what Mamas charges for all your, you know, 10 to 12 prenatal visits, being at your birth, coming to your house for 4 visits after the baby is born. So, and, you know, that's just what they charge for the room. That doesn't count for the care providers.
It's a very expensive way to deliver healthy babies to healthy mamas.
Yeah. So somebody is making a lot of money on it.
And here's the interesting thing about that. Even though we have better outcomes and are therefore cheaper because interventions are expensive, right? Insurance companies, we charge maybe a third to a fourth of what it costs to have a normal vaginal uncomplicated delivery in the hospital. But insurance companies will pay 100% for a hospital birth, and many of them won't cover us at all.
We had to pay for all of our 3 births out of pocket. We had no... insurance.
Even people that have insurance, it won't.
We had insurance, and we tried to take all the possible routes to get coverage, and we didn't get anything from the insurance.
So, but I want to remind people that it was still extremely affordable compared to what you spend on the hospital.
But the thing is, again, affordable. What does that mean?
Right.
The value, personally, for our family, for our kids, of having a birth at home.
Yes, you but we have a lot of people that call us on Medicaid that
are low income families.
So true, yeah.
And we do whatever we can, you know, for those people. But we can't do births for free.
Yeah,
because we have to.
It's like telling them to go shop at the farmers markets because it's much healthier. But you know, a whole chicken costs $20, so it's like it would be great if they could, but they can't. It's not available to them. It's true.
So you, Erin, you mentioned Call the Midwife, which is a series I really like on PBS, and I wanted to talk about England for a second, and where the National Health Service advised healthy women that it's safer to have their babies at home or in a birth center than in the hospital. So they're basically saying that, you know, if you have an uncomplicated pregnancy, which is 45% of the total population, you're better off in the hands of a midwife. Why is that not our case in the U.S.? And what is happening in Europe and how different that is?
Well, you're talking about the 2014 NICE guidelines, which are the National Health Service guidelines that are that kind of govern the practice of all the healthcare workers
Correct.
In the United Kingdom. And those guidelines say that for low-risk women, all women should be offered, this is really interesting to me, that they say all women should be offered a choice of home birth, a midwife-attended birth in a freestanding midwifery unit, a midwife-attended birth in alongside midwifery unit, which is like a birth center connected to a hospital, or a hospital birth. And they go further than that, which I think is fascinating, by saying your job is to offer these four options and not give your opinion. Leave it to the woman. Like, they're not allowed to say, you can have all these options, but I recommend XYZ. They actually have it in their guidelines that you're not supposed to influence the woman's decision, which I think is
that's amazing.
It's
that's protection
and really revolutionary.
From the industry that looks to make money on it. It's kind of hands off. That's fascinating.
Because for me, when people ask me why I went into this work, I usually sum it up with the word sovereignty, which is sovereignty means that I am the queen of me. I am the sovereign of myself. And I'm allowed to decide whatever I want to decide for myself. And so the reason that I went into this work is because I so strongly believe that women are entitled to sovereignty and have been denied it over centuries. And that when the women's movement started to really take hold in the 1950s and 1960s, their focus was on our right to not procreate. And so we kind of forgot about the women who were choosing to go ahead and have a baby, that they also need to have their
choice,
sovereignty respected and protected and defended. So I can't remember what the question was.
England, remember? Wonderful.
The sign of a good conversation.
One of the biggest failings of the U.S. healthcare system is that when we find out the data, the statistics that tell us that we have the highest neonatal mortality rate in the high-resource world and the only increasing maternal mortality rate, our hugest failing is that we don't say, oh, let's look at that list and see who the number one country was, and let's go there and ask them how they do it and try to do it like that. Because we have this, the chauvinism of the United States is that we think that we do everything the best, and so we don't need to consult any other countries about how they do it. And that is our big failing, that we are not asking somebody who knows how to do it better than us.
Did you mean to say Trumpism when you said chauvinism?
You know what? I think it started before Trump.
Yeah, of course.
And it's not just England. I want to just also say that most European countries, that the average woman sees a midwife and that home birth is very common. It's up to a third of births in Netherlands and so it's not just one country, it's many countries that offer that. And I think for me also one of the saddest things is that I think that we are very busy exporting our model of interventionist-led care to places like Central America and, nearly anywhere. We will lend aid to buy things like fetal monitors, which have not been shown to improve outcomes. So I think that there are many things that we could learn from other countries, and there's many things we could stop trying to teach other countries to do.
When we had our babies, the same thing happened to me happened to me when we started our business. And when we started making gelato in 2004, that's where we really learned about the industrial food system and how it is not about the most healthy, most delicious tasting piece of fruit or vegetable. It's about making money on all of that. And that's the same thing in that when we started having babies and getting into it, that we learned about that, where it's not about what is the best, most healthy, careful, empowering way to have a baby. It's about the money. It's the all. It's dictated by the market, and that is sinister at
best.
Did
you see the movie Sicko by Michael Moore?
I didn't.
I saw parts of it.
It was like a really scathing review of the American healthcare system. But what's really interesting to me about that movie, I watched the whole movie waiting for them to get to the maternity care part. It's not in there.
It's so funny.
And to me, the business of being born is the answer to that. And the question is, you know, why would they leave the whole maternity cycle out of it? It accounts for 60% of revenues for U.S.
hospitals.
Because
it was a Michael Moore making the movie, right? So
well,
it's done from
Well, I think it's because Michael Moore probably started looking into it and realized it was a whole other movie. Huh. It's like a whole other thing.
And I guess I want to say that it isn't just about the money. I think the money is a big part, but it's also about fear, which I think is a big part of our political efforts now that are just controlling people through fear.
Yeah.
And I think that women who are pregnant are often controlled by fear. You don't want your baby to die. I've actually had providers say that to women. And they don't, as Mari said, we are really interested in what are the facts, what is the evidence. But telling a woman she's got advanced maternal age when she's, you know, in her mid-30s, that's just, it's not looking at the woman as an individual. And yes, there are it's really important to monitor your health, but, you know, most babies are going to be coming out just fine. And so let's identify, what the needs of an individual woman are, and not just try to scare her into doing what's easiest for you.
Amen. Guys, you're listening to the Dolcezza Sherver Experience. We are live from the Line Hotel, and we're talking to two incredible midwives, Mari Brin Rothman and Erin Fulham from MAMAS, a midwifery practice in Washington, D.C.
Can we just say what MAMAS stands for?
Yes.
MAMAS is a bilingual acronym for Metro Area Midwives and
Allied Services.
And Allied Services.
That's why
and
it
Mujeres,
takes two.
Ayudando Mujeres a Salud.
Yeah, that's very important. You work with midwives in El Salvador as well, right? So you reach out to the Latin community, and that's one of the main focuses of your practice.
And interestingly, you know, I'm sure you're aware that El Salvador had a civil war in the 1980s and 90s, early 90s, aided by the United States. And they had a very conservative government that was controlled by five families from Europe that took over the farming and everything in El Salvador for many decades. But finally, a few years ago, they finally achieved a president from their more progressive party and established for the first time an office of gender equity in the federal government, and as part of that, an office of women's health, the Ministry of Women's Health. And they did some work figuring out the maternal infant mortality rates, which are terrible in El Salvador, and they realized that they needed help. So what they did...
Called a midwife.
Yeah, that would have been smart. But what they did was they went to the United States, which is like this, you know, great state-of-the-art medical god of some kind, and they got a panel of United States OBs to consult with them. And now they have a rising C-section rate, and they have the place where we were serving, you know, where we were trying to work with the midwives. They had instituted a policy where first-time moms had to come to the hospital, and unfortunately, a lot of the people that live in the surrounding rural area, it wasn't really feasible for first-time moms to get to the hospital. That was, you know, 10 to 20 kilometers away. And so what ended up happening was the end result of this new policy that's, you know, handed down from above by people that don't know what it's like on the ground. Now the midwives are afraid to attend first-time moms because they're not really supposed to. And so now what it means is that if you're a first-time mom, you have an unattended home birth.
Wow.
And the midwives there are actually attending fewer and fewer births because they're afraid of getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Worse gets worser.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. I want to ask you about breastfeeding, which is, you know, so important.
My favorite topic.
So why we have so much trouble with breastfeeding in the U.S.? And I say that because I want people to know that as much as the science is there indicating that breastfeeding reduces health risk for the mother and the children, and 75% of mothers initiate breastfeeding in hospitals, only 15% of children are exclusively breastfed for 6 months, and the Academy of Pediatrics recommendation is to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months.
Which does not mean stop after 6 months.
Exactly, but we're not even getting there. It's like 15% of women that are nursing their babies for 6 months. And so why is it that we have so much trouble? And I also have a lot to say about it, but I'm going to let you talk first.
Yeah.
Well, I would say one big problem is the lack of maternity leave. So it's, you know, we have people in this country who have to go back to work after a week or
this
two.
This country is so fucking psychotic. I'm so sorry to say this and interrupt your rant. So everything I'm listening to, it's just like we're crazy in this country.
It's supposed to be about the family.
Right.
But let's see, women won't get paid if they don't show up to work.
Jesus Christ.
And then you wonder why they can't breastfeed their babies.
After 12 weeks, right? Basically, yeah. You have to go back to work.
Or 12. People who go back
systems.
After 1 week. If you get maternity leave, it might be 6 weeks, and it probably won't be paid. And there are a lot of women who can least afford to take time off work, who only get a few days. So that really affects the your ability to breastfeed.
There is no support for doing it that way whatsoever.
Let's go back even further than that, because what are we? We are mammals, right? And if anyone who's listening or if you guys have ever seen any mammals give birth, what happens? The baby comes out and the mom, you know, licks away the membranes or whatever, and then the baby crawls up to the mom's nipples and latches on and stays there for an extended period of time, weeks even. And so if you go back to that moment with humans, what happens in the normal course of events, if they're not interfered with, is the baby is on the mom's chest, skin to skin. And they land there, and they are a little stunned for a second, like, whoa, what just happened to me? Everything that Aaron described before. And then they start looking around for something to suck on, because that's what gives them comfort. And they find their own hand, which smells like amniotic fluid, and they suck on it for a minute. And then they start, their crawling reflex kicks in, and they start crawling to one side or the other. And they encounter a nipple, and it smells like colostrum, which is that first fluid that comes out. And that, coincidentally, smells like amniotic fluid, which they're used to. And they go, oh, well, I'll suck on this. And this connection is made. And so they don't have, you know, lactation consultants can be totally wonderful, but it's a whole profession that got built up out of, you know, we caused the need for this profession by separating moms and babies before the baby could make that connection.
So intervention creates the problem, and then the agency is formed to resolve
exactly.
the problem.
And so if we would just leave the baby and the mom alone, you know, put the baby gently on the mom's belly and then cover it with a blanket, don't rough it up with a blanket, and let the parents gently dry the baby off and let the baby make that journey to the breast and make that connection, which can never be forgotten. Babies that make that connection, studies have shown that babies that make that connection, even if they're separated for days, when you put them back on the mom, they just latch right on.
And again, I want to say a lot of it is about fear, because moms get all these messages. Oh, your baby's not getting enough. You know, are you sure you have enough milk? Maybe you should, of course you should breastfeed, but then after they're done, give them a bottle afterwards. It's again,
yeah.
This fear that women are afraid their babies are not okay.
And technology is the answer. Oh, you're going to breastfeed? What kind of pump are you getting? That's like the next question.
You know, when we decided that we were going to have home birth, we learned really fast we would be out and whatever. We'd meet people and it would come up maybe, you know, obviously Violetta was pregnant. And whenever we mentioned that we were going to have a birth at home, most people freaked out. And what we received from them in their freak out was fear. And so again, when you're about to have your first baby, there's a lot of vulnerability because you're moving into an unknown, a major unknown. What, birth, death, you know? And that's something that it's so all of this stuff. I think obviously all problems are all because of fear. We don't trust in what is. And so because we react in the fear and then the lack of trust, we create problems where there really never is a problem. It's all good, but it takes a lot of work to actually be able to exist in that, like, trust, right?
Right. And if 38% of people have their babies cut out of them, then they're starting into their nursing relationship thinking, well, my body didn't work for that.
Exactly.
So why should I count on it working for this?
Right.
And even supportive providers, pediatricians, have this kind of skewed plan of, instead of just counting on the baby and mother establishing this physical relationship that works, they say, yes, yes, breastfeed. And as soon as the baby finishes nursing, you should start pumping. Okay, so every 2 hours, the baby's going to nurse. And instead of going to sleep after that, the mom's going to pump milk. And then she's got to get it back into the baby. So you build this exhaustive...
levels and levels of uninformed experts that guide everybody in the wrong way. And so we're all clueless, and we just fuck ourselves from the lack of trust.
Yeah.
And knowledge and full of fear. And that's why we have... Yeah.
Something I struggled with personally nursing my babies in this country is the negative attitude about nursing in public. And it always struck me as odd that you can see Kim Kardashian naked on Instagram and show it to your coworkers, but you get offended by my nipple while I nurse my baby on the subway. So what is it that makes people so uncomfortable with breastfeeding here?
Well, we've sexualized breasts, right? So people think of it as, you know, a sexual part of you instead of a part of your mammal nature. Built for, you know, there's our favorite breastfeeding book is called That's What They're For.
Exactly. The message is very simple. Nursing is, you know, normal.
I have a tagline on that whole subject because that's one also. It's like I say here in this country, everybody everywhere, all countries have their problems. I'm not saying that it's only here, but it's like the greatest sign of the psychopathy of this country is the fact that something like breastfeeding, which is essential for our survival of our species. I mean, it's the most important thing, or we do not survive without that, has become sexualized, eroticized, or offensive, you know? That's insane, because when I go down to South America, it is such a casual thing to be sitting there hanging out with babies and mothers, and they pull out their breast, and they breastfeed their baby, and there's not one iota of weirdness that you have here, you know. And the fact that that's something that here in this country has the stigma that it has, is it shows a sickness that is so deep in this culture here. It's really, it leads to so many other problems.
And it's not just weirdness, it's shame. Women are shamed for breastfeeding. And that is just crazy.
It's just
I've been shamed.
Yeah.
I have women next to me saying, what are you doing? Cover yourself.
Oh my God, it drove me crazy with our children.
One of my favorite things I've ever seen on Facebook was, it was the title of it was something like 10 things you can do to... reduce, what was it? 10 things you can do to eliminate discomfort when nursing in public. And then I saw the title and I was like, how dare you? Why should I reduce your discomfort? But then it turned out to be 10 things that you can do to yourself if you're uncomfortable. Like one of them was move away from the one who's breastfeeding. Another one was like, you know, understand that this is a physiologic process. It's not about you. And it was like, it was all these instructions for the person who was offended rather than for the person who was nursing. I thought it was really great.
Yeah, it's important that we all understand that, you know, it's a natural process. And
I think that's improving, don't you?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Some places.
Yeah. It's hard to tell now. It's really hard to tell with so much data information being beamed everywhere. I mean, I think so. As we go forward, obviously there is eventual progress. But again, it's kind of like the food system that we see every day because of what we work in, how stacked against the like local farmer that has a family on that farm, how stacked the industry is against them. And it's the same
way.
Well,
and our clients are always astonished being in our care and not being like really part of the system. Somehow they get mailed free samples of formula and they're like, how do they even know I'm pregnant?
Well, the aggressive marketing, the aggressive marketing by infant formula companies is another reason why we have a hard time breastfeeding.
So. Do you know recently that the American Academy of Pediatrics journal, the Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, I thought this was shameful, they published an article, a study that showed that, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like that babies whose moms were not producing enough milk initially could benefit from formula supplementation. And I read the whole article and there was not a single mention of donor milk, which is like a really big thing now. And then I looked carefully at the bottom of the study, and one of the authors of the study, who's on the board of the American Academy of Pediatrics, sorry guys, I'm outing you, is on the board of Nestle.
Of course. I try not to say it's sinister or not, this and that, but it's just, it is all driven. I mean, Aaron said obviously there's a lot of fear to it, but it's the market. Everything is driven by the market because that's what's reinforced.
Well, the market
supported.
Uses the fear,
right? Exactly, to make more. I mean, it's just it's really sad and raging, but comforting that you guys exist and there is hardcore deep communities and deep pockets that do not follow thoughtlessly the ways of the market, the ways of the industry, the examples that we have around us. There are definitely hardcore alternatives.
And talking about you mamas, how can women get in touch with
mamas?
Yeah,
if you're going to have a baby, if you're thinking about you, this is one of the experiences in your life that is at least worth looking into, because it really is, how do you take control of your own life? And this is a one rite of passage that goes way back in our species that empowers both the man and the woman. It's really, really important if you're interested.
And I just want to emphasize that all of the interventions in hospitals are really useful and can be life-saving under
100%
certain circumstances,
when
but
needed.
Just not on a routine basis.
I agree. I definitely don't, when I rail against the industry, this and that, I think that thank goodness there is modern medicine. Thank goodness for when it's needed. The problem is we overuse it and abuse it because we don't have the awareness of this.
So to answer Violetta's question, as you said before, you can just Google Home Birth Midwives DC or Maryland and find us. Unfortunately, we don't go to Virginia. So you said DMV, it's really just DM.
DM. Sorry,
but,
Virginia.
But our website is mamasmidwives.com. It's www.mamasmidwives.com.
Well, thank you so much, Erin and Mary, for being with us. We were so looking forward to the show.
Yeah, this feels so good, just hanging out and talking with you, lady. Just, I mean, you've delivered our three children.
It was
like the connection with somebody else that's just hard to find. So thank you so much for everything and obviously coming here.
Well, thank you for having us.
This was great.
See you next time.
See you guys next time.
Not for a baby, though.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.